Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Jet Blast, episode 14. We've had a little bit of a hiatus because of life and kids and summer and all those things that happened, but we're super pumped to be back with you guys, and we appreciate you continuing to listen to us over and over and over. It's never ceases to amaze us how many of y'all download this show every week and pops up in your feed. I mean, I get it if it's crime junkies, but I mean, this is Jet Blast. It's just me and Andy. But anyway, speaking of Andy, what's happening, Andy? What's going on in your world? Been staying busy?
Not much, Nathan. Yeah. We're staying busy.
You guys went to the Caribbean. You were voted the superstar of the Caribbean something, weren't you?
Well, one of them. There was two of us there. So Emma Watson was the other one. But yeah, it was a good time. So yeah, did the Caribbean. We're staying busy, adding people to our little network. And that's about it. Hanging in there, sweating up here in Michigan. It's extremely hot for us.
So what is extremely hot in Michigan?
65.
it feels like it's 85. I think it's like 82 outside right now.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't judge anymore. I lived in -7 degrees the other day and I was not prepared for that. So I do not judge anybody anymore on. Well, I jump on a lot of things, but I'm not going to judge that. I'll judge on other stuff.
I'm just not made for it. You know, it's hot.
It's hot. Can't turn on the AC in the Myers.
No AC in the Myers and just a bedroom AC here at the old house. So, you know, lots of fans blowing on me.
Oh, goodness gracious. It has been a little crazy here. We've got kids. We've got Andy been in the Caribbean, got our day jobs, got all kinds of stuff going on. It has been crazy. It's just, you know, schedules haven't synced for us, for guests. It's just been a little bit crazy. And our guest today, so really excited about this. So I've actually met Ryan a couple of years ago at an NBAA meeting because, you know, no matter which alphabet group you work for, we all have a very similar mission. And so today we have Ryan Wagaspak. See, I got it right, Nathan. I forgot the U, so I said it right, Ryan, at least once.
Good job.
Yeah, Senior Vice President at the National Air Transportation Association, NATA, however you want to say it. But very excited to have you, Ryan. Y'all are doing a lot of stuff, and we've got some really good topics to talk on. And Nathan has some pretty questions, and I know Andy, in his Michigan, you know, they have some questions about charters, too. They don't not necessarily know how to do all that up there for some people.
Yeah, we do not. The governor, especially. No.
No. So I wasn't going to name the governor, but, you know, some things that happen.
Bazinga.
You guys to make, you know, what ignorance isn't necessarily an excuse, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff that sometimes is ignorance. No. And, you know, there's intentional and then there's ignorant. And so, you know, y'all have been doing a lot of work to try to kind of make sure and educate, which I think is a very critical piece. But no, welcome, Ryan. So tell us a little bit about yourself. And we already said... How'd you get into this crazy, wacky world of aviation?
It is a crazy, wacky world. It is, but I appreciate the offer to come on and speak. Started flying late 90s, early 2000s, and 9/11 and drove me into getting heavily involved with the flight school and owning the flight school and to finish my ratings, started doing illegal charter like crazy, not having any idea what I was doing. No, I'll openly admit that. Had no idea.
Statute of limitations is gone. Ryan can admit it. It's okay.
And then kind of slowly recognized what I was doing and like, oh, this does not feel good. And this does not feel right. And exposing me and my certificate. And started doing marketing and doing events when the VLJs started coming out around the country, building my network of clients and aircraft owners, which then emerged into building 135 and 145 ops. And so I did that all over the country. And then in 18, took an executive role within ATA and was very active in the industry and wanting to see change, wanting to make the industry better. That was really my main focus. And so I really got heavily involved with the 135 committee within NATA, then started going around the country doing roundtables. And kind of listening, like, what is these issues? And specifically on illegal charter, was this just a Southern issue, Bible Belt issue, or was this happening everywhere? Because a lot of folks thought that it was just a Bible Belt issue, but it is not.
I can't imagine it would be.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah. It's actually, and now, you know, we've learned it truly is a global issue. and Global Coalition to start addressing things. But been active within ATA, and it has been an incredible ride since so far.
And I think, you know, you said it's a global thing. I think a lot of times some of these owners just can't wrap their brain around, you know, they're like, look, I've got a, you know, 140-foot boat, and I want to let my buddy use it, and who cares, you know, and that's what we do. And, you know, that's just the way it goes. But, you know, everybody forgets about that little part of the FAA, right? So
there is very little, if no, understanding of how active the FAA is within regulating the skies that we fly in. And, you know, to your point, Ethan, I mean, you know, for years, I say this example all the time, me and my wife, my girls, we always go down to the coast. We rent a boat because I don't want to own a boat. I don't want to deal with all that. So rent a boat, right? Signing my life away, never once thinking, what am I signing? Right?
Sure.
Until, you know, you run into the dock and you own the boat in the dock.
No, that's right.
And that's very similar. You know, I'm taking operational control over that underpowered, you know, boat that we get to rent, and trying to deal with different things. And you just don't recognize that. It's this, what I always like to call the Uberization of our culture, right? 10-15 years ago, we never would have gotten a car with a stranger.
Right.
Now we're like,
I mean, when I grew up, that was like a forbidden, right? I mean, don't take candy from a stranger. Don't get in the car, you know? I mean, and now it's like we plan for that, you know?
Exactly. Same thing with aircraft, right? Now we want to get, we've Uberization of our culture has kind of taken place. And now we want to get from point A to point B, the most cost-effective way, the easiest way. And so it's kind of, you know, Eagle Charter has always been around, early, you know, 90s, 2000s, and beyond, but it has been, it's exacerbated based on, you know, the cost of these aircraft, looking for different solutions, people, the simplistic and ease of people wanting to make their lives easier, right? And I can just call you and say, hey, can I bum your airplane? There's far too often, it's not in malice or an ill intent. It's not criminal. What we try to kind of categorize it as the clueless, careless, and the criminal.
Clueless, careless, and criminal.
Right. I mean, it's in a bunch of different categories, you know, that not recognizing how heavy the regulated space is, right? Not recognizing that not all pilots are trained to the same standard. And how could we ever imagine that a pilot would get in and fly an aircraft that he or she was unqualified to fly? That never would happen, right? And we'll pause for the for effect. It's true. And I think that's been a lot of the things that we've continued to hear is the shock, right? Would you ever have a surgeon go and perform cardiac, you know, cardiothoracic surgery, and he's a podiatrist? No, you know, but you know, it does happen in the healthcare world. And the only reason I can say that is because my whole family's in healthcare. But we live in a high stakes, right, game, and there's a lot to lose. And unfortunately, you know, the Falcon 50 crash and in GSP, unqualified crew, the Sala crash over in Europe, unqualified crew. And we can sit there and say those are one-offs, but it's happening a lot more than we know. And they're just not craters, right? We're not having catastrophic accidents.
Right.
There's a lot of, you know, suspected illegal operations for unqualified crew. Of course, these aircraft are they maintained? You know, we don't know how they're maintained. And the, you know, the other interesting thing of this, you get into the Uber, you're driving along the road, the driver's running red lights or speeding. You recognize that this is taking place. You recognize that they're breaking the law. This is not right. This is unsafe. You're in the back of an aircraft in a tin can, a pressurized tin can, right? Maybe. At, you know, 8-1 or at 225 or whatever, right? And do you know what's really happening up front?
No, you don't.
So you
can't, I don't.
And you're not going to say, hey, pull over, let me get out, or, you know, you're walking up to the aircraft and you're seeing that, you know, questions about it. What do you do? It's a private airplane. There's still a lot of glam and you know, unknowns about it. So you just, sure, you just don't know. A lot of it's just plain and simple lack of education.
Right. So Ryan, you said, what were the three categories you said? Illegal charter or what?
Careless, clueless, and criminal.
There you go. The three C's.
The three C's. Well, you know, I just think about it. And now granted, so I spent most of my career with the maintenance side. Yeah. And I tell you, as soon as they walk up to an airplane, they've already evaluated the airplane. It's one of the reasons I don't sit by them on a commercial flight. I don't want to hear about it. Yes, I know the engine's making a noise. No, there's nothing we can do about it. 35,000 feet. No, please don't talk to the stewardess again or the flight attendant again. But at the same time, not everybody has that knowledge to be able to make, like you were talking about, Ryan, you know, you walk up, what kind of assessment can you make when you're looking at an aircraft? And so you do have, I mean, you just have to trust. I mean, it truly is trusting. That's right. And there, that goes into the clueless. So, you know, there's all the clueless, and that's usually the passenger or the person who says, somebody says, hey, we've got this. Do you want to go? Sure.
Sure. Right. Oh, it's a cheat. Oh, I'll just throw in gas or do this. Oh, sure.
Okay.
That's the point. It can be a beautiful aircraft, brand new P&I. The crew comes out with a crisp white shirt with epaulettes. Are they qualified?
I don't know.
What happens too? And Ryan, this is part of just on the owner side, you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, I in the past I have seen this happen where, you know, you have an owner has a trip on the airplane, their buddy goes with them, whatever. Yeah. You know, they do the whole trip, and then after the fact, you hear that, hey man, let me know how much I owe you for today's trip. Or, you know, and again, they're just looking at it as a business transaction. Sure, you can pay half of today's trip. And they don't know, right? The crew never knew about it. You just might hear it in passing. You know, I've heard it before in an FBO, and I promise you that crew didn't know that, right? And they shouldn't.
And you know what? And that is a great point, because one of the things of our work, us working heavily with the FAA, is that, you know, the pilots are those that have the most to lose, right?
Sure.
There is a tremendous amount of focus on the crews. So my question has been to the FAA, how much should, if you're utilizing a contract crew, how much is that contract crew really going to know? Right. And what is the responsibility of that contract pilot or crew? I mean, we can even go the different direction, say it's a full-time salaried employee of the corporation.
Right. Absolutely.
There is elements that, you know, if you're a contract and you're dealing with what you assume is the owner, then you get out to the aircraft and, you know, Kelly and Jim show up.
Right.
Well, are you really going to question? And this is the slippery slope over it. This is why it's not black and white. Mm-hmm. Know who you're flying, know the potentials, because the FAA is definitely amping up on enforcement.
And you know, it's interesting because some of these owners, right, are so uber private. That's why they want the airplanes, right? Mm-hmm. And so the guy that's, you know, flying somebody in the company owned Myers 200, you know,
right.
And and the rest of the department may not know, dispatch, right? The pilot may not know, just, you know, somebody at the company might know, you know, the president of the company and his buddy that went to pick up the sailboat, you know, they know about it, but the poor pilot just, hey man, we're supposed to go to, you know, wherever. They're none the wiser.
And that's one thing that the FAA has been really addressing is, let's look at education first, right? But when does that intent shift from, okay, you got me, I screwed up, I just didn't know, it was a weird, you know, it was a weird situation, understanding that there are those one-offs,
right,
true, to truly the intent shifts to a commercial intent.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To circumnavigate the regs to make money holding out. That is why it's not black and white. It is, yeah. These investigations take years and years to flush out. And that's why it's so critical to understand, right? What, where, what, when, and what are you doing? But to your point, I get it. I mean, there is a lot of, that's why you own the private jet or private aircraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think
go ahead, Leah. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, I think of like a 91 operator, you know, who is, you know, they're top notch. Their pilots are trained. Everything is top notch. So that they never question it because they probably meet the 135 standards just from a matter of just general operating. That's what they do anyway. You know, they meet it all. You know, your maintenance team is on it. So as far as from like a operating standpoint, you've met all the standards. You're not authorized, you know, but you've met all the standards. But so what happens? So you never would have thought that now you've broken the rule because of, like you were saying, because somebody else somewhere else decided to get some money for that flight. Right. Thank goodness you already operate in the manner that is the safest manner that meets home. But at the same time, you know, where does that liability go back to? I mean, I
can't speak from the FAA's perspective, but what I've seen so far is cases like that, truly, it's more of a like, you know, we understand, right? It's more of an educational, like, just understand the guardrails. They're not going to rain terror down and take certificates and enforcement and actionability. It's those are the ones that are, they're really going after the criminal that continue to operate. You know, one of the this has been an interesting little tidbit. One of the unintended consequences of our, you know, activity on illegal charter has it's thrown a tremendous amount of new entities being certified to become certificated. Mm-hmm. So right now we sit at about 1,900 air carriers, 1,900 in the U.S. It's always fun to put that in perspective to the airlines, right? Mm-hmm. And understand how challenging both of those worlds. We require, you know, vastly amounts of different workforce with the FAA. There's 1,000 entities on the CSOP list.
So what's the CSOP list?
That is the certification process. So when you want to be a certified 135, of course, just like becoming a 145 repair station, you got to go through the certification process. So there's 1,000 new entities working through the certification process.
That are pending.
Wow. Oh, gosh.
Wow. He's right. Now, a lot of that, I mean, I wouldn't say a lot, but a chunk of that is the eVTOL, kind of people getting prepared for that. But a fair amount of those organizations, what I've been told, are the folks that are saying, hey, you've been operating in the gray, become certified.
Mm-hmm.
You're pushing those boundaries too much, get certified and have some oversight if this is what your intent is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So let's take it a different direction, right? So like, I'm thinking of it from the criminal perspective, right? So, you know, if you got, all right, let's get ready. So
getting comfy here.
Illegal transactions, right? Just forget airplanes for a minute, but let's say somebody's dealing narcotics, right? So the dealer's guilty and the user's held guilty, right? So the buyer and the seller are both held accountable for the use of a forbidden fruit. So is there any move in the illegal charter space to penalize the users? Because some of the users, again, are in that criminal category. Some are clueless, some are just careless, right? Just because by their nature. But some of them, they know, and there's a reason they're buying it from Bill with the airplane over there instead of, you know, Lee's charter company.
Yeah. From the aircraft owner perspective, I would be more concerned because, and I'll get there's many layers of this question. The aircraft owner perspective historically has been kind of potentially fined, but it's more the pilots. Who has gotten more involved is Department of Homeland Security and CBP, who can confiscate aircraft.
Yeah, so even if it's a domestic though, right? Yeah. So I'm talking like to Moline, Illinois to Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, typically, unfortunately, it's the pilots. Mm-hmm. I mean, the aircraft owner can get popped a little with a fine.
the guy that's out buying it, there's no enforcement for the guy that's out, you know, seeking an off-book charge.
The John, right? Yeah, that's, I mean, yeah.
John. Yeah, I was going to say that, but I reined it in. Exactly the path I was going. But.
Just had to throw that out there. That's right.
I mean, at some point, you got to hold the junkie or the John accountable.
Right? Well, and that is something where...
A program or something. I don't know.
And, I don't have a great answer other than education. Understanding that this could penetrate your estate if something were to happen. This could penetrate your corporate umbrella. There are exposures galore if, because what a lot of these individuals doing these lease or that are getting these aircraft or leasing these aircraft, they're not getting insured.
Right.
They're going with this thinking that they are covered, right, under the aircraft owner's policy. No, they're not.
Right.
And even if they're listed as an additionally insured, sometimes the underwriters are saying, now they're saying, no, we're not going to touch that. So it's more if something were to take place and happen, or because again, the individual leasing the aircraft has taken on full operational control.
Sure.
Do you understand that? Has that aircraft been maintained? Can he be penalized by the FAA for having an unqualified crew?
Sure.
Or it not being maintained, or you blow a tire because of a litany of reasons at the runway. And, you know, I mean, you know, we all know that stuff happens in aviation.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, I think to Lee's earlier point, I shout out to my fellow 91 brothers and sisters, right? I mean, I'm just going to disclaim, nobody's saying that y'all aren't maintaining your airplanes, right? And nobody's saying that y'all aren't training properly. What we're saying is, what Ryan's trying to say is, the folks that are in that criminal category, if they're willing to do a legal charter, they also ain't been to Recurrent since Christ was a choir boy. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. And
painting duct tape and calling it speed tape is not the same thing.
Yeah. And you're probably overdue on half a dozen items, right? So that's what we're talking about. So what is NATA doing about... Are you guys involved in any of these? So shifting from charter just a minute, just something that's kind of near and dear to me in another vein that I'm running into. So are y'all doing anything about the, or do y'all have any voice in the in-registered airplanes, the vast number of them that never set foot in the United States since the day they got registered?
There's our crime.
There it is. You know, it's funny. It's not funny. We're having more and more of these conversations of issues. And we're not dealing much with the trust side, but what we're dealing with is.
And I don't mean that. And we're going to do a separate thing. Someday y'all may hear a spinoff like crime junkie style investigative podcast that goes into that whole deal. And Ryan, you can come on and be a guest for part of
that. Thank you.
Yeah. But I do, outside of that particular trust arrangement, I mean, you can go and pull any number of types of airplanes that might be in Central America or might be in Europe or might be in Canada even, or in Asia, that are in registered, not associated with those trusts, but those airplanes have not been in the U.S.
That's exactly
years. Not that they have to be, but are they being maintained? And is anybody qualified flying them?
And we are. We're working heavily with the international field offices within the FAA, bringing this to their attention on all these areas. The Sala crash was a glaring example of an in-registered aircraft, right? That was
unfortunately all the narco jets too, right? I mean, it's a legit thing.
It is. No, it is. And you know, there was a crash this weekend in Haiti. In-registered, flying missionaries, zero oversight. It's very, very, very frustrating. We've got to, it's been great to see the FAA begin to lead on a global stage again when it comes to illegal operations, right? when it came to the regulatory space, they had, you know, they've had their challenges. We're leading now. I get more and more comments from countries and areas around the globe saying we have tremendous amount of aircraft here in register doing illegal things. We need oversight.
Doing whatever.
Right. And we need something, and we need to learn on what to do, what not to do. It took me to Mexico City 2 years ago to bring our regulators together, the FAA and the Mexican authorities, to just discuss this key issue, because there was another crash that took, unfortunately, innocent people because of just lack of understanding, lack of oversight. And, coming out of the private sector, that's been one of the biggest challenges then, is being able to take a deep breath and work at the pace. It is, because they don't do that very well. Let's get it done. And so again, things take time. They take time to mature. They take time to get out there and engage and bring everybody together. So I know it's a terrible answer, but it's in process.
No, well, it's not a terrible answer. It's encouraging to me to hear that it's in process. It is something that y'all are looking at. I mean, it's one of these, you know, as our buddy, mutual buddy, Marlon Priest says, you know, it's how does a mouse eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time.
That's right.
At least you guys are looking at it and, you know, it is something that's coming on the radar, because, you know, I think it's going to be a larger issue once everybody understands the number of airplanes we're talking about that are that in-registered plane that don't live here, that I'm not, and it doesn't have to live here, but I'm not sure who's flying it or who maintaining it or if they are. Huh. There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
What was the cycle of a typical build from an OEM that they think these aircraft are going to live? What, 5-7 years?
Yeah. So typically you'll hear 30 years, right?
30. Okay. So 30 years.
Yeah. It's typically a 30-year thing. Now we have G1s out still running around today. There's some based in San Antonio and Dallas. So,
right. I got in Birmingham, we've got a Sabre 68.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Nice. Yeah. I mean, again, it's incredible what has taken place. But once those aircraft reach those limits and what they, you know, where do they go? And they're not going to the boneyard. They're not going to the scrapyard. They're going other places.
Yep. Yep. Some of them are exported. Some are, you know, we're seeing more scrap right now than you might think. And people are starting to get pretty sensitive to, you know, I see, at least, you know, probably 5 or 6 years ago, you could easily flip some of these super old, like Citation ones or whatever, you know, and people really didn't care about the environmental impacts from stuff like that. Now, I mean, it's just hard to move that stuff. Huh. I mean, you look at the used inventory, which is a space I play in every day. And I mean, man, you've got to be super plugged in. You want to buy a plane, and it's worse than real estate. I mean, you've got to make an offer and then go sell. Hey, I made an offer on this plane to your client, because if you don't, you're not going to buy an airplane. I mean, you know, we have 5 acquisition projects going on in our company right now. And every one of them are because we, as a team, really quickly huddled up, said, this is a good buy. This is a good plane. Gosh, I hope our client, you know, we're going to put an LOI in. I hope that, you know, they'll take it.
No, please. Up, you
know? Yeah. And, but you know, that's knowing your client and getting some parameters up front, but you can't find a plane, start an LOI, work through it, cause it's going to be gone. Cause one of us is going to come by and buy it. I'm just telling you.
How long do you think that'll last?
You know, it's going to last through fourth quarter. Fourth quarter is going to be difficult this year. Because we're going to see people who want to buy airplanes and who need to burn some cash for a variety of reasons. You're gonna see some people are holding back. I happen to know that, you know, there's some brokers holding people back for listing airplanes, waiting for that fourth quarter run. Mm. You're gonna see some overvalued pricing. Uh-huh. We're already seeing slightly overvalued pricing in certain places, specifically the CJ3, 604, 605 markets. You're going to see, though, in fourth quarter, a sort of a land grab thing. I mean, it's going to be like throwing a piece of bologna in a tank of piranhas. I mean, it's going to be nuts. It's going to be nuts. But But it's good news for the OEMs. They're going to sell some new airplanes.
It is. We've been hearing that from our managed, you know, membership, our 135 management clients, saying, you know, crazy amount of customers buying, no inventory, charter historic highs. The interesting thing I'd love to hear from you guys is, what is happening in the parts world?
Oh,
Andy. Quality of parts, I'm hearing, is absolutely horrific.
Andy, how many requests are y'all getting?
You know, we still don't get a ton. We just sign, I mean, we keep on building up the, you know, the part side. We just got plane stock to join us and whatnot. So it's kind of the, still the chicken and the egg thing with us, but we typically see about 10% of our requests every month are for parts, you know, mostly from part 135 operators looking for stuff that they just can't find it. So they come to us and, you know, see what our people have laying around the warehouse, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, Ryan, I've heard of folks and, you know, a lot of people would like to say, well, this OEM, that OEM, but it's really the supplier level, right? Where the issues I see it are, right? And, it, you know, particularly with some of the European suppliers, and I'm not going to name drop any to hurt their feelings, but, you know, there's some big name European suppliers that, man, they just can't get stuff out the door for whatever reason right now, you know, and it's problematic. You know, we're seeing even at the MRO and OEM level, you know, planes sitting for 2 or 3 days just waiting on parts.
Wow.
Kind of crazy.
And are they, is the quality there when they arrive? Because what I'm hearing is they're not.
different conversation.
Different.
So,
okay.
A little story. With one of our customers on their airplane, I'm not going to say the type because then everybody's the guilty will be known by the world, and I'll prefer to protect the guilty on this one. We had an issue of a steering problem. We ordered parts. The OEM didn't have any parts in stock. Again, I don't think the OEM's fault. They had a run from the fleet on the parts. The supplier in Europe was still closed because of the pandemic. And this was within the last 2 months. Suppliers still closed because of the pandemic or just starting up operations. Finally was able to pry some parts out of the supplier's hands, got them shipped to the U.S., brand new parts because there were no repaired or anything, installed on the airplane. Both of them failed out of the box as soon as they were installed on the airplane. The airplane at this point had already been AOG 8 days. Called the OEM back. They call the supplier back. They're already closed because it's now the weekend and we're still on a COVID crew. Took 5 days to convince the OEM to pull the parts off of production airplanes. They sent the parts from production to our customer, installed the parts, and after 16 days of being AOG, it was returned to service.
Wow. Wow.
So
glad glad they got a team around that can handle this. Quality management, right? Understanding all the ins and outs.
You know, you just,
yep.
Yeah, those are you don't want to hear about those stories.
Uh-huh.
That's why we haven't been recording. Nathan's been working.
I'm recording.
No, I was talking about your deal with AOGs, Nathan. I wasn't talking about that. Mm-hmm. No, there's, you know, the parts world, it's interesting. But you said something a minute ago, Ryan, and, you know, talking about illegal charter, talking about the clueless.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of thinking about, then you kind of talked about aircraft management partners. And so, you know, when you're talking to, one of the things I think about is, you know, somebody who wants to, you know, they're trying to find a way to maybe break even, you know, something with their 91 aircraft. So they get into a management deal so where they can charter their aircraft under the 135 and stuff. But sometimes you got to be with the right person. You got to have the right management company. There's just about everybody has a management company now. I mean, they're right. And so how's that impacting some of those areas?
And that is what's truly frightening to me. One of those unintended consequences, right? You have entities that have been playing in the gray that are now being potentially certificated with regular, you know, with oversight or potential oversight. To what level? right? That's the issue. So the need for being able to delineate quality aircraft management, right? I've met, you know, you talk about what are these key areas that drove me to being more involved with an association was seeing, you know, when you're comparing yourself to others that are, you're trying to provide a great product, transparent, work with the aircraft owners because we want aircraft owners to be happy, right? Uh-huh. I have met too many aircraft owners that bought brand new aircraft, maybe last 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. And they go, this is absolutely the worst business ever. This has been the worst experience ever. They don't mind writing those checks with multiple zeros behind it, right? It's the transparency. It's understanding what's happening with the aircraft. Why do those brakes cost $40,000? Or why does that, you know, untruly, what is it? And Mr. Management, you know, management company, what are you doing to advocate for me? Mm-hmm. How are you protecting me and my interest?
Well, I think once somebody gets burned, right, once some of these owners even get burned or even might slightly have gotten burned by a management company or an aircraft transaction or whatever, I think it's so hard for them to come back. Right. I hear from folks all the time, aircraft owners all the time that say, this is the worst industry in America. It's full of nothing but criminals and scoundrels. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's hard to argue with, right? I mean, it's hard to argue with people doing back-to-back transactions, people mm-hmm. getting a bass boat to get their engines overhauled at shop Y. You know, people, it's a mess, right?
It's the Wild West.
But that's really it. I hear that all the time.
It is.
And, you know, that's one of the things with this podcast, with what Andy's company does, with what Lee's company does, with what my company does, that we're all trying desperately. We love this industry, right? And we do think it brings value, right? We do think it makes businesses better and families safer and all those things. We, you know, aspire to turn that around, right? To make it not that way. Uh-huh. And there's plenty of others. It's not just us, right? But there's still some of the old school group out there, whether they're selling planes, managing planes, or you know, other activities that give us all a bad name, and it's hard to overcome that stuff.
And that's what's very frustrating for me I agree with you 100%. I love this industry. I want this industry to be has so much opportunity, and there's so much great. It's been great to me, and it's very, very frustrating to hear those comments because I look at myself in the mirror and go, well, man, I'm not like that. That's not me. And I don't want to be associated with these people. Like,
that's right. The people I work with aren't those people.
And I have to say, I don't know if it's just luck of the draw. I really don't know many of those people. When I look at my experience in the industry, granted, I've met some of them. I mean, I'm not saying that it's, but the people that I respect, 20 years of doing this, I mean, I can probably count on one hand. And so when you meet those, it's kind of like all people, I believe most people are good. I truly do that. But it's those small percentages that can just completely, I still go back to when the big three couldn't tell you the value of a business jet and how they just completely tanked an entire industry in like 2 minutes. Yeah. I mean, you talk about
one of those jokers couldn't have said, Mr. Senator, the same damn way you got here today would have been a perfect answer.
But
taxpayers paid for it.
Exactly. And you talk about there's so many people that, you know, the management companies, the old school of doing things, transparency is, you know, there's no reason not to be transparent anymore. You know, things like, you know, Andy's a perfect example with what he brings to the table. It's about transparency. And the people who get upset about the transparency are the people who don't want to be transparent in a lot of ways. Right. But sometimes they've overcomplicated things so much they can't be transparent. Some people are intentionally transparent. Other ones, we've overcomplicated things so much.
Yes.
That just, you can't even get to the meat of what you were doing. So then it takes somebody like Andy to go, well, it's not that complicated. It's really not that complicated. And then you go, whoa, okay, well, wait, yes, it is. I've got 50 people on my payroll that say it's this complicated.
Right. So we must charge you $300,000 to go buy you a G550 or to sell your G550, which is the easiest airplane right now to sell, by the way. If anybody's paying that stuff, please call me because we won't charge you that much. But anyway,
got a deal
I'm
for
not
you.
Ashamed, right? I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, you know, frankly, you're going to work harder to sell a Citation 5 Lee than you are a Challenger 605 or a G450. You're going to work 10 times as hard, but the pyramid's inverse. We're going to charge that 605 client, you know, 200, some of these firms, 200 plus grand to sell that airplane. And that's you're getting ripped off, man. It ain't real estate. Your time costs the same amount, no matter what the cabin size is.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not just that side, though, the management companies either. I mean, we deal with it and live and breathe the MRO side, and it's the old school giant MROs that get complaints about, right? It's the only, and I will repeat, the only industry that does not have a standardized quote template.
Right.
Literally, if you want a house built, if you want a building built, if you want commercial stuff done, it's all done on a template for the industry, for HVAC, for whatever it may be, for a new server farm. Aviation, oh no, dude, you're going to go through like, oh, like check small print line item number 9. It says right there, we're going to ding you 30 grand when we remove the interior, but we didn't want to tell you that because
we wouldn't win the job.
That's how we get you. Yeah, yeah, and what are you going to do about it? Once the plane's on jack stands and the interior's out, what are you going to do? Come pick it up? Right. You know, I mean, that's just reality. So it's the old school, you know, I mean, it's weird. There's still people in aviation to this day that think women shouldn't be in aviation. That's how old school people are that we deal with, you know? And it's like, what the hell, man? It's hopefully it changes. It is. I shouldn't say that. We have young people now that are, you know, like Matthew out at Hillsboro and all these people that are starting to get involved. Yeah. And the times are changing for sure. And they'll demand transparency. And people that are my age that aircraft, they demand it. I mean, when they go on our app, we had 15 pings this weekend for AOG just this weekend. And they can compare 3, 4, 5 different quotes and see those hourly rates right in front of them. So, well, why is this guy charge $170? When these other guys are charging the average is 135 or whatever it may be. So it's just something that people are going to come to expect. And eventually, if you don't do it, you will be punished eventually.
For sure.
Well, consumers are more educated today than they ever have been.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
there's, you know, you talk about that. Consumers are educated. And, you know, that's like, there's still some of those people in our industry. Well, those dang millennials. And I'm like, well, the millennials just wrote the check for the airplane. So I think you need to get over the millennials. Right. They're also your boss. So I'm just saying.
Right.
They got all the Bitcoin.
That's right. The what? Does that have chocolate in it? I'm kind of confused. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a that level of education. And honestly, you know, Ryan, I mean, you talk about educating, I think as slow as the wheels of the regulatory world change, the opportunities for education have blown up exponentially. Mm. I mean, you know, there's ways now to talk to people that you never would have thought of. I mean, it takes just a little bit of creativity and an iPhone and you can talk about whatever and start educating. And that, so, you know, the education piece, whether it's, I mean, for the clueless and then sometimes just the careless. And then how do you identify those? You know, looking for, like, a pilot might have a question on, you know, there might be something a little iffy. The resources they have without going to the FAA first.
That's right.
Because before it was like, I don't know who to call except the FAA. Uh-huh. And if I do that, are they going to take my license? I mean, what am I going to do? But now, you know, there's all kinds of resources for education. I don't want to say there's not any excuses anymore, but there's almost not any excuses. There's resources available. And, mm-hmm. you know, even, you know, we were joking about LinkedIn earlier, but I mean, my network is full of experts. Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. experts of all kinds of levels. I mean, Ryan, you're one of them. I mean, Nathan, I knew you before LinkedIn, so that's okay. Andy, you're stuck with me now anyway. But
I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
You're not one of the experts. You are one of the experts. I'll go to you.
No, Andy is.
No, don't label me that.
Well, you're like certified. You got an award and everything the other day.
You got an award. Said you're an expert.
You know what? Ryan was down there at the same show as me getting a suntan just like I was.
But Ryan did not get an award.
He didn't get a conch shell with his name on it like you did. It said grand champion.
And hopefully he's not like picking at his sunburn either.
I was wondering what was happening behind those closed doors. Trying to shake it open and nobody was opening. I had no idea what was going on.
Well, you know, I follow the old school mentality though. I had to pay like $100 to get that award. That was like the trade-off, you know.
US dollars?
Or you paid 10 grand to write for one of the publication about how great your business is and how all the young people are coming in and ruining the industry, right?
Dude, is it sad that
there's actually somebody that did that recently. So
Somebody
reach out to me offline, I'll tell you about it.
They'll say, hey, do you want to be on this podcast or whatever? And I always, it's sad, but I have to be like, well, is there like a charge for this? No, we just want you to be on there. Oh, okay. Because back 2 years ago, it was like, yeah, we'll do all this. And, you know, it's like 10 grand.
Nah, bro.
I'll start my own podcast.
Your invoice is almost ready.
I'm okay, thank you.
People don't pay to be on here or listen to it.
That's okay.
Yeah. Bless
there's too
heart.
Much expectations if buddy's involved. Then it becomes work. We don't want this to become work. Not at all. Well, Ryan, I mean, there's so much, and you know, you have to. You know, we talk about education and having access. You know, I do believe that's one of the things like COVID, a lot of the alphabet groups, NATA and BAA, you know, you name it. Y'all have done a great job during COVID of sharing information of like, you know, looking at kind of thinking outside the box, doing different things. And, you know, that's, I think that's something that we can all appreciate. And, you know, and I think that now it's become kind of part of your deal. You have to keep sharing that information because people really, really want it. And they're craving it kind of, you know, I know I am. I like to look at it in the small bites that I can do. And then it sends me on my little rabbit trail of, you know, my rabbit trail of research. But, you know, it's great to have that. And, you know, to have platforms where, you know, you can consistently speak about it. You don't have to wait till the trade show. You don't have to wait till you're invited. You know, there's just so many opportunities to continue educating people. And, you know, it's even illegal charters. I mean, looking at this now, it's something we've always talked about, kind of like you said, South. Is it the South, the Bible Belt? Where is it? No, it's a global issue. It's a global issue. But now, you know, if you're looking up, I mean, even if you try to like look up a charter, you're going to find, even if all you go to Google is charter a jet, you're going to find something about an illegal charter, which me as a passenger, I think, well, what's that? What is illegal? Why does it even make sense? But at least now, you know, it's starting to create that awareness as people are going out and as you're educating. So, you know, it's still a long ways to go, but I think it's definitely making progress.
Thank you. I agree. Got a long way to go.
There's always those little people who try to skirt the rules and make a few extra bucks.
That's right.
So you're not going to get rid of those, but you know,
I think they call them demo flights. I've heard of somebody was saying, well, I'm just taking this guy on a demo flight. I'm like, really?
Or the one that I love now. And so this in many cases is, as Lori McGee, when she was our guest, talked about, right? So dry leases have their place. They can be very appropriate, especially intercompany and related entity. But when a charter company all of a sudden dry leases a G4 to a high net worth individual, and then also is providing the crew, that wasn't a lease. That was definitely charter.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Or how you got back from the islands, that demo flight.
Mm-hmm. No. But there are some legitimate, to defend our OEM friends and
there are legit
sales companies, there are legitimate demo flights and there and there's documentation that needs to be done. So again, before y'all send hate mail to me and Lee and Andy and Ryan,
we're not
saying that all that's nefarious. What we're saying is there are folks who over leverage things like demo flight as an example.
Well, they give those OEMs a bad name. The people who are doing it right, they give those people a bad name who are doing it right.
And that's why we say it's great, right? It's not black and white. I mean, there is so many variations as to, well, this is legal, but if I take one toenail across this line, it's illegal, right? Or it's right. It is very, and that's why it's challenging. So know the fundamentals. You know, we talked about resources. That was one of the first things we did, was really roll out on our website resources, right? Like for a broker, for an end user, for our operator, like what do we need to be looking for? But also, let me look up this tail number and see if this aircraft is even on a certificate.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not to say that that, you know, query is 100% perfect, because it's working 9 different lists that the FAA has and merges them in. And
but at least ask the question now.
But ask the question.
Yeah, and someone's going to try to, if it's exploitable, I mean, it's like Nathan with his taxes. If there's loopholes, he's going to find them. And, you know, they're going to do the same.
Now I'm getting out of here.
That's been documented now.
No, it's, I mean, if there's loopholes there, they're going to find them. I mean, that's just the way, unfortunately, the way it is, right? With everything. Right.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's just driving to work, right? It's no different, right? So the speed limit's 70, but you know, you happen to know that on this stretch of I-94 that if you go 78, you're never going to get pulled over, right? Doesn't mean what you're doing is incorrect or not. It just means you know how far you can push it.
Right.
Interesting. So, Ryan, what else is NADA got working on? I mean, that's a lot. Not like there needs to be more, but And where can people learn about y'all?
Yeah, we can go to our website, nata.aero. That's the best resource to kind of find all our areas. Of course, sustainability is a key focus of ours. Our chairman, President Tim Ovitz, is chairing numerous committees on sustainability across the world, kind of looking at how we evolve. And this is a potential real threat kind of coming to our industry, right?
Yeah.
Sure, just as we discussed a little earlier, you know, about telling our story, COVID gave us the opportunity to share what our industry really is, right? And what we really need and what we're doing. So I like 2020, I started traveling again in early July, going around to airports, small non-139 fields, and communicating what your airport and stakeholders provide to that community, whether it's air ambulance, testing, PPE, and then that turned into, and why we need these airports, why we need this infrastructure, and how it really has propelled our country. We should be proud, right? We have the infrastructure. There's too many countries out there that are so far behind on the vaccine distribution, simply because of lack of infrastructure. How does this testing, how does the vaccine get distributed to rural areas around the country? It's through our airports. It's through our operators. It's through aircraft, pilots, technicians that all play into this. And being able to showcase that to communities that may be really struggling with, why do I have this loud, you know, noisy airport right here where I want to put a residential community?
Airport was there first.
Was there first? That's right.
I miss my noisy airport.
I know, but
I'm looking right at you.
So really, kind of continuing again. We say educating our industry, we're educating our end users, our aircraft owners, but also educating our community leaders, right? And that is another key focus of what we're going out and about and working with, you know, organizations all over the U.S. Put me on the road a lot during COVID, to say the least.
You're still here. We're all good.
I'm still here. Did get a little worrisome about November, December. Started getting into my head. I thought,
Yeah, I bet.
Even when you try not to, it's still kind of there. It's a weird thing.
I know. For sure. So we're also working heavily with underwriters, aviation underwriters, on the premiums, you know, very active with the International Union. Over based in London, that is the association that represents all the aviation underwriters and reinsurers. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, we're starting to see some plateauing of rates and premiums, which is good.
That'd be good.
Yes, very good.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm seeing rates on things that,
Well, and that's the thing, you know, not a lot of folks recognize that the aviation pool is all aviation is out of one pool, right? Whether it's airline, biz aviation or satellites, it's all, let's just hope Bezos makes it up and comes back.
But, you know, Ryan, I have some customers that have their airplanes on 135 certificates, you know, that are all doing all the right things. And they have gotten some insurance quotes because they're on a 135 certificate that are literally mind-blowing. And the underwriters are telling them and the agents are telling them, look, if you were on a 91, so this goes back to what drives people to do illegal charter, right?
Right.
So, I mean, there's this huge push-pull, right? Because the operator's like, my insurance went up 380%, one exact case, on this Challenger over last year because I'm on 135. And you all literally told me if I wasn't on 135, that it would have only went up 100%, right? Which is what a lot of people saw that were 91. So it's really bizarre.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that has been part of the challenge that the underwriting world has faced, right? So post 08, we saw numbers slow, activity numbers slow. The reinsurance market was flooded with private capital. And they saw our industry as a real opportunity to go see a significant ROI. Well, then what happened is the underwriters started trying to build their book of business, right? They were writing each other down on premiums, not truly addressing risk. So fast forward to, you know, let's just say 2020, right? Or when it, well, really when the Boeing, you know, instances started taking place and we started seeing this massive uptick in fear and concern, the reinsurers left the market because they weren't getting the ROI. The underwriters, the season had started to retire out. The tribal knowledge, as we can all relate, being from the repair station side and industry side, was not being passed on where risk is and where it's not. We underwriters typically look and say, okay, you're a commercial operator. Your exposure goes from X to, you know, from A to Z, right? Based on your volume. Part of the illegal charter, you know, efforts and education is educating the underwriters. Doesn't necessarily mean if you've got 120 leases on an Excel,
that's something right.
Yeah. You, there is a massive amount of exposure because no one,
no way that those pilots are going to get that right.
That's there's right. No one, right? So really, addressing
up ones and zeros. That's right. Maintenance guys can't spell, pilots can't add. That's a thing. So everybody laugh, but you know.
But that's been part of the focus is really educating the underwriters also where the risk is and where it's not.
Right. I like the fact that where it is and where it's not.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's because lots of times don't assume if you're not sure what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly right.
Even though I do that all the time. So, but I'm not an underwriter.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, Ryan, we really appreciate you coming on and sharing all this good stuff. And we'll put the NADA.ARO info down in the show notes. We'll put your LinkedIn profile down there. So people can get in touch with you directly if they have questions and can help educate. And if, you know, if y'all, if our listeners are interested in what NADA's working on beyond just illegal charter and trying to snuff out where all the airplanes are at around the world that and whether or not they're being properly looked at, you know, I think there's a ton of work clearly going on sustainability and environmental services, which are great. You know, all safety. The groups are working on that safety. Yeah. So, you know, NADA's, you know, a lot of people point to a lot of the other groups, but I think NADA often is underrated, right? So I would specifically encourage y'all to take a look at what NADA has to offer, get educated. And Ryan, I assume y'all are going to be at base coming up in, the end of the year here?
We will. And we've also got our Business Aviation Week in the first part of November.
Nice.
Bridge business. And we're working with, in conjunction with corporate jet investors. So it'll be that week
in Miami. We'll be at CJI.
We'll be there.
Okay, we'll be there.
You're a red carpet.
Yeah. But we're doing a big push because How does the regulatory, how does all this space blend into bettering your business?
And so while we're there, could I point out some of the people that are this guy? No, I'm kidding.
No, gosh.
I'm kidding.
Just point them out.
It's a joke, Lee.
Oh, no, David. Well, we'll go viral. That's okay. There
it's
we go.
It's a joke.
Oh, my goodness. Well, no, that's great that you'll be down there, because we will definitely be down there planning on it, looking forward to it.
Be down there. I'll be base. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ryan. I will put that link also for that. Tell me again, it's called the Business Aviation
Week. Business Aviation Week. Yeah, in Mountain Blue Week. In Miami.
Cool. Yeah, thanks. Awesome. Well, I'll include that in the show note links, and y'all should definitely check that out. Again, NADA's got a whole lot more than most of the folks in our industry realize. Kudos to you all for doing such a great job and picking up the torch, really, for the whole industry in championing stuff around educating people around the three C's of illegal charter. There's your title.
There you go. Careless, clueless, and criminal. Cool.
That's right. That's right. Look at Andy. He's sitting there like, he just needs his pipe in right now. He'd be like a detective right now.
Yeah, I'm at the ponder. Yep.
Well, thank y'all very much, Ryan. Thanks. We appreciate you, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Paul.
See you later.